Bang! Drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast. Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Those people are the freaks, man.
Rice.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Big Jim.
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Because I told you.
Samantha.
I am going to have regular sex with you whether you like it or not.
Not another podcast.
Find a point where we can
next
break.
Next week on Not Another Podcast.
In the exciting conclusion of this really boring podcast.
I was going to say, I don't think I would call it exciting whatsoever.
Not at all. Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I'm James.
And I am Bryce.
And we were trying to plan a big show, but you're probably just going to get the same boring shit you always do. Actually, today might be pretty poignant because, Bryce, you had a loss in the family.
Yes.
And we were talking before the show, and I honestly think this would, it's good to talk about this stuff. They always say talking about your grief and everything.
Yeah.
Your loss comes not directly on the heels, but I recently suffered a loss of the same thing, and we're talking about the loss of a pet.
Yeah.
And there are people who will argue, and these people are all less
soulless
than
assholes.
Human. Yes. Yeah. Have never known the love and companionship of a pet.
Or just don't give a shit.
Or they just don't give a shit. Freaking godless heathens.
Those
which is
bastards.
Funny coming from us, given all the
from a godless
religious
heathen. Yeah.
But yeah, recently, and I think we've talked about him on the show, Bane, incredible dog. One of the best dogs I've ever known. Recently lost a battle. And it kind of, it wasn't sudden.
The onset, the disease was kind of a shock because it just, all of a sudden, he wasn't doing good.
Yeah.
But the fact that we were going to have to make that choice to prevent his suffering any longer wasn't so much of a shock because we had had about a month and a half knowing that it was going to happen again at some point.
You were given time to process.
Yeah.
Which is unusual.
Yeah.
A lot of times when that decision needs to be made, you're not given the option.
Yeah.
For me, it was not given time. I had always said that when my cat, who was getting old, she was 16.
Yeah.
16 to 17. I'm not exactly sure on her exact age, but I had her 16 years. So at least 16 years old.
Yeah.
Her health decline was very fast.
Yeah.
And when we had to make the decision, it was like we had no time to think about, but we had always said we're not going to, if she's that sick, we're not going to prolong her suffering.
Exactly.
It's not fair to her. Yeah. It's not fair to her.
Yeah.
It's very selfish of us to keep her around just because we want her around.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and that's the hardest thing for any pet owner. Or I think even in the case of someone who's terminally ill and can't make that decision for themselves, it's a very selfish thing to prolong suffering just to keep that pet or that person in your life.
Yeah.
Sometimes the hardest decision we have to make
is to let them go.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's kind of, this is a topic we've never talked about before.
Yeah.
And we've talked about a wide range of
we've
of
talked
things.
About pretty much everything.
Yeah. And a lot of things we've been able to poke humor, you know, poke a little fun at, have a little humor with. This isn't something I don't think you can.
Yeah. I mean, you can, but...
Well, yeah, if you're a godless heathen asshole. They say time and tragedy equals comedy, but when that tragedy is your personal tragedy, I don't think that there is any amount of time that would equal comedy for it. So that saying does work when it's kind of almost, I hate to use the word faceless, but faceless people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like plane crashes or something. Those happen to people you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you had someone that you knew on that specific plane crash, that plane crash would never be funny.
Yeah.
In fact, it could take humor out of plane crashes.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You can make jokes about tragedies years after it happens. And the proof is in the pudding. There's jokes about... There's Holocaust jokes, for God's sakes. You know? But there is... We've never really talked about grief and how people deal with it, how people handle it.
Yeah.
And there is, like, just tons of ways that people deal with their personal grief.
Yeah.
For me, losing... It's weird because I've lost grandparents. I don't have any grandparents.
Yeah.
All my grandparents have passed. But when they passed, I was so far removed from them that it didn't...
It wasn't as much of a loss as if they had been...
More a part of my life. Yeah.
Because I just lost my first grandparent about 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like it that long ago.
That was... kind of a rough time because that was the first family member that I had I had lost.
And I remember being there and completely being there for my wife, your sister, and seeing her go through this and wondering to myself and feeling a bit of loss because I knew him.
Yeah.
Not as well as I would have liked, but I knew him. And wondering how I would have felt... Or imagining how I will feel when it's apparent.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the part that feels suffocating. If you, like, if I ever think about losing a parent, it feels like I'm going to suffocate.
Yeah. And it's like, it's one of those things that you know it's going to happen.
Yeah. It's inevitable.
Life. It's life. Yeah. It's going to happen. But I don't think there's anything that you can do to prepare yourself for something. Even if, like, you know for a long time they're suffering a very long illness or something, you know that inevitably that's what's going to happen. I recently suffered the loss of a coworker this year.
Yeah.
A coworker who I wouldn't consider us friends, but we were friendly.
Yeah.
We worked together.
You were acquaintances at the least.
He's someone I looked up to. We never had the chance to hang out because from the time I knew him, he was already diagnosed and suffering from cancer. And so for the year and a half or so that I worked with him, we became friends. And we even joked, as was his nature, about his illness.
Yeah.
But I think he knew from the beginning when he got his diagnosis that he wasn't going to beat it. It was a type of cancer that the survival rates are not high. As a matter of fact, I have a friend of a friend who is suffering the same cancer, and she just was recently put into hospice care.
Yeah.
She's declining very fast, so far as I know. I'm not kept up on her details, because, again, friend of a friend.
Yeah.
So, knowing things like that, knowing what my work associate went through, and it's very hard, and you know the family members are in that situation where we're talking about, where inevitably they might have to make that decision. They might have to make that choice of, you know, because that person may not be able to to say, I fought as long as I can, I'm done. How we got from pets to humans, I haven't made the leap, but I think it's just loved ones in general.
Yeah.
So,
I have a former coworker who was diagnosed with cancer, and it metastasized very quickly and spread very quickly, and he's still in good spirits. He's doing well, which is good.
Yeah.
He's hanging in there. Not a good prognosis. but he's making the most of the time he has. And then I have another coworker who last week lost his wife at a very young age.
Yeah.
And that I could only imagine being destroying to a person.
It's one of those things. It's something I think about for myself. Sometimes my wife will not come. I know how long it takes my wife to get from her work to my house.
Yeah.
I know that she gets off at a certain time, but I also know that whoever comes in after her, they talk and share. Yeah. And, you know, she makes sure that whoever is the next person, she's making sure she's ready for what she... So it takes 15 to 20 minutes from the time she actually gets off work before she leaves.
Yeah.
And then I know that it's another 15 minutes before she gets home. If it takes longer than that, and I am unaware of...
You go into full-blown panic mode.
Yeah, like, and it's even worse.
She's in a... Her car's crashed in a ditch. Yeah.
There have been times, because I have to... For my job, I have to go to bed quite early.
Yeah.
But I usually... My body just wakes me up roughly around the time that she should be home.
Yeah.
And I will stay awake long enough to listen for her sounds.
Yeah.
She's not... She tries to be quiet, but there are certain signs. Sometimes it's just a sliver of light coming through the door, or it's her going back and forth, dropping things off, or whatever. I know she's home. I know she's safe. But there have been times where I've woken up, she's not there. And I can't get back to sleep until I hear her come in.
Yeah.
And then I know she's safe. There have been times, though, where it's been, for whatever reason, she has not been able to get off work at the time she's supposed to. Sometimes someone doesn't come in, what have you.
Yeah.
Her initial response is not to call me and let me know she's safe.
Yeah.
So I sit and worry. And even on afternoons, I'll look at the clock and go, well, she should have been home half an hour ago. Okay, I give her another half hour in case she went to the store or something.
Yeah.
And then I call her.
Yeah.
You know, and there have been times I've called with no answer.
No answer, that's the worst.
And it's just how we think. These are the people we care about.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you go into that full panic mode and you start to wonder, what should I do? What should I do? But there's times that I, you know, I lay awake and wonder what my life would be if I got that knock on the door.
Yeah.
Or I got that phone call, and how devastating it would be.
Yep.
And those are very sudden. Those are car accidents, or my wife works in a hotel and they've been robbed before.
Yeah.
And I always just, it just clutches your heart, you know? You cannot prepare for everything. So the people who are able to spend the time knowing, you know, for however long, they get a little bit of time to process.
Yeah.
Such as an
illness.
They
can make the most of the time that they know that they have.
They get a chance to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a few minutes.
Yeah.
Or a couple of months.
Yeah.
But when it's very sudden.
Yeah.
And you have to process after the fact, I think that's harder.
Yeah.
I think
you definitely, I've noticed with the two pets that we've had to put to sleep, I can tell a difference between the grieving processes with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's because I had different feelings for either of them, because they were both very big parts of my life. It's the different amounts of time that I've had.
And that I think is the key. It's not,
because it really, the saying that that time helps all wounds, it's true, but it doesn't heal them. It makes them number, so it hurts less.
Yeah.
Because when I think about Timber, our first dog, it still hurts, and it still makes me sad, but not like it was when it first happened.
Exactly. And I think the saying that time heals all, I think is incorrect.
Yeah.
I think the saying should be something more like, time helps you understand.
Yeah, time helps you cope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Because, again, we're just talking about how being able to process during or before a loss as opposed to a sudden loss.
Yeah.
I think there's differences in how we grieve. If you're spending time with someone knowing that the end is coming, say you get 2 months with that pet or that relative or that friend, and you get the time to process that very soon this person is not going to be... Boy, Benson is really just going at his paws.
He's chewing the shit out of himself. He does that all the time.
It's so weird.
I think it's...
It's funny because he makes noises when he does it.
He's like... he's like a little pig. I think it's the pollen in the grass when he's outside.
Oh, he's getting pollen.
Yeah,
in his paws.
I think he's. It's like getting itchy. So
he knows we're talking about him too. Look, he's going between the two of us.
What's up? Hi, Benson. You gonna stop? No.
Oh, you're talking to me.
Yeah. Then Mr. Jealousy comes over.
But yeah.
Pause for 1 second.
I think having that time to process does help in the grieving process.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
You get time to understand that this person, this pet, whatever the case may be, is not going to be here much longer.
Yeah.
And it gives you a chance to spend time and say your goodbyes.
Yeah.
Without actually saying, well, goodbye.
Yeah.
No one ever wants to do that. But
no.
I think... And this is, again, this I'm not a grief expert or anything. This is just from my own observations and whatnot. But I think that having that time as opposed to very suddenly, I think having a loss very suddenly makes the hurt linger longer.
You have more regrets.
Yes.
Because you aren't able to say the things that you want to say.
Exactly.
You can't say... Like, you can't apologize for something and have that pain still because you're always going to kick yourself saying, well, this was stupid. Why the fuck did this happen? And I never said I'm sorry for it or whatever it
or
is.
Or just never got to tell that person how much they meant to you.
Yeah.
Or even that animal.
Yeah.
I know for myself, when we had to put our cat down back in May, it was... And I know on a very intelligent level that the cat didn't understand what I was saying.
Yeah.
How could she? But she understood the tone. Animals understand the tone.
Yeah.
More than what you're telling them. I think they can understand words to an extent.
Dogs can. They actually just proved that not too long ago.
Well, I think cats can as well.
They definitely understand the feeling, the emotion that you're putting off, because they pick that up.
Yes. And I know I had always said that when my cat was ready to go, she would give me the sign.
Yeah.
She would tell me in her own way that it was time. And the day I had to put her down, that morning before I went to work, she showed me. She did something that she hadn't done in years.
Yeah.
And that was to try and climb into my lap.
Yeah.
For a long time, she used to like to sit on my chest with her head curled under my chin.
My cats do that all the time.
Yeah. But as she got older, she stopped doing that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It could have been it hurt to do that. It could have been she just was just done with it. Who knows? Cat.
Yeah.
But that morning, particularly, she tried to climb into my lap, and she didn't have the strength to get herself up, and I picked her up, and she tried to curl up into my chest.
Yeah.
And that was the sign, and I recognized it, and it hurt so bad, because as much as you prepare yourself for it, it's still going to hurt. You don't want it to happen.
No.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
So when it does, and you're caught, and I tried to be very strong because I knew, and I should explain this. I had the cat for a very long time. I had the cat before I met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
The cat was always very jealous of Are you coughing or
coughing? I'm trying not to cough on the mic.
Oh, dude, no one cares. The only people listening are
there's
you
only
and me.
A couple of them. And they know we don't edit.
Yeah.
Fucking work.
You get what we give you and you like it.
I know. It's not like you pay for this.
Having that sign, having that, knowing that it's time, and having the cat tell me that it was time, that she was ready, that she was tired of fighting, and knowing that whatever illness she had, the decline was within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fast. And we still don't know exactly what it is, but we think that she had cancer.
Yeah.
That all the tests that the vets were doing said that there was something worse. And we could have taken the cat to a specialist and maybe gotten maybe a month more with her.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would have cost us a lot of money, and she would have been suffering the whole time.
Yeah.
She would have been poked, prodded, been in places that she wasn't comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
The night before we had her put down, she was at the vet all day, and I brought her home, and she was just exhausted. And all she did that whole night was lay against me.
Yeah.
And looking back now, I realize that was her saying goodbye. When I went to the vets, when we actually had her put down, the poor thing was terrified.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't there. Because yeah. As soon as I showed up, she calmed right down. My wife was telling me she was very agitated during everything. She knew that it was the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't there. And as soon as I got there, she calmed right down.
Yeah.
I was able to put her on the table. She laid down. And we said our goodbyes.
Yeah.
And it still stings. Even now, talking about it, I'm still remembering it. And we're now almost 4 months from it.
Yeah.
I still see her.
You still hear things that remind you or make you feel.
I'm still running across her claws in our carpet.
Oh, you'll find stuff all over. Our first dog, when we had to put him to sleep, we would still find hair. We still find hair, and we've moved.
They're always with you, though.
Yeah.
As long as you remember them.
Yeah.
It's so funny how we as humans find ways to deal with our grief.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's always said is they're always with you.
Yeah.
We've come out on the show and we've stated that we don't agree with religion.
Yeah.
Therefore, we don't really agree with a heaven and
yeah.
hell. I think the way we describe, or the way we, not we, but we as humans deal with grief is to imagine our loved ones, our pets, our family, our friends who have passed on. We like to imagine them in a place where there's no
happy,
suffering.
Healthy.
Exactly. Yeah. And those desires for our...
to see them again.
I think that translates into a heaven. And I think our hatred, for lack of a better word, of evildoers. Evildoers in quotes, yeah. Because evil is subjective, yeah. As is good. I think that translates into a desire to see those people suffer forever for yeah. whatever crimes they have committed. That translates to hell.
Yeah.
So, but I think essentially what it comes down to is so long as you remember.
Yeah.
And not just the good stuff. You have to remember the bad stuff,
too. You have to remember
too.
Everything.
Everything. Yeah. So long as you remember, but you think fondly.
Yeah. It's like our dog. He was a pain in the ass. He was a total pain in the ass, especially when we first got him. There were several times where we were like, this was a mistake. This yeah. was a very bad mistake, but we pushed through it, and we have some really good memories mm-hmm. of him because of it.
He was a... And I don't think that, no matter what the case is, you always have good and bad. That's yeah. what makes life.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to...
You can't forget one characteristic of somebody or something because it loses itself.
If you don't suffer through the bad, you don't yep. appreciate the good.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even with my cat, there was bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got her for 2 weeks, I thought I was going to lose her.
Yeah.
Because she got very sick.
Yeah.
But eventually she pulled through and she gave me some of the funniest memories
yeah.
any cat could ever give. Like falling in the damn toilet and getting stuck inside. Oh, God, that's funny. Oh, who does that?
I know, right?
Cats are supposed to have great balance.
I know.
She fell in the toilet.
It doesn't surprise me either.
The best part was, though, that, you know, you expect you open the lid of the toilet and the cat would shoot out. She slunk out, completely embarrassed, and even had the gall to turn around and look at me and give me that look that said, "This never happened." You know, those are good memories that yeah. we have.
Yeah.
You know, Bane is the same way. He
falls everywhere.
He was so gangly, he could not control his legs.
He never grew out of the puppy stage.
Yeah.
He was always a puppy.
And he was adorable for that.
Yeah.
The fact that he would pick up a toy.
He just carried it around.
Just carried it around.
Yeah. He had to have a toy in his
didn't
mouth.
Didn't want to play, yeah. just had to have something. Yep. I think he had an oral fixation.
Apparently.
So, I really wish we had Jim on, too, because Jim's actually suffered the loss of his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having someone who's gone through the grieving process
yeah.
and actually, you know, of someone close.
Yeah, and when we watched Witness with him, and he saw those scenes with his dad.
He got very emotional.
And he saw that scene where his dad was more in it.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell it was tough for him, but I could see that he was proud of his dad for what he had done.
And on the way over here, I thought Jim was going to be with us. Unfortunately, Jim had to work today.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me. I was thinking he had posted something on Facebook that really got me thinking. And we can talk about this. I would have liked to get Jim's take on this because I've heard him on another podcast talk about this subject and that subject and what family means. Now, you come from a very good family. I will say, having married into that family, up until I met my wife, I didn't know what a functional family was.
Your
family is very
unique. The white picket fence type.
As a matter of fact, you guys do have a white picket fence.
It's
a slat.
Section,
it's not pickets, but yeah, it's a white fence.
Yeah, wasn't always there.
Very good parents, very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, and you'll agree with this. I've had some.
There have been rough moments with them,
but I think that's part of family.
They mean well.
Yes.
But they don't articulate at the best time or have the best timing mm-hmm. for a lot of stuff.
Or sometimes don't articulate their feelings as well as I think even they'd like.
Yeah.
And it's caused some friction.
Yeah.
Especially with the two people who've married into the family, let's say. It's something that's forgiven over time.
Yeah.
It's understood. But it's sometimes tough for me. I don't know how your wife takes it because her and I have never really discussed it. But for myself, it's sometimes difficult to process because I know they mean well.
Yeah.
I know they care.
Yeah.
But as an outsider, sometimes it feels, I'm trying to think of how best to put it.
Kind of like you're being put on the spot.
On the spot or even tested or trying to be pushed out.
Yeah.
I know that's not the case.
Yeah.
But sometimes, and the reason for that is very simply because I come from the epitome of dysfunction. I don't know if my parents aren't going to listen, but I'm going to throw them under the bus anyway. My birth parents were divorced when I was about 7 or 8. My dad was in the Navy, so he wasn't around very much. But all the memories I have of my father when he was around are very... I don't have a lot of memories of him being angry or punishing me. I know he did. I can remember times where he was angry, but I don't remember punishments.
Yeah.
Mom, on the other hand, was quite wicked with the wooden spoon. So,
Mom... Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Exactly. Mom had difficulty with relationships. She just couldn't... I'm watching you stare down the dog.
That's not going to do anything.
No, nothing. No. He's just... what, are we playing? What's going on? These are times I really wish we had cameras in here just to film the dogs.
Yeah.
That look he gave you. And now he's all sad. Look, you made
you're
him sad.
You're fine. You're fine.
Oh, there it goes. Technology, folks. I was about to ask if Dan was here.
No, he hasn't been here in a while, so
everything's
I've scrubbed
working.
The Luddite from the place.
I don't know what your experience with dysfunctional families are. I'm seeing the look, and I'm thinking you have experience with
that. My wife's family is unique.
I think all dysfunctional families are unique in their dysfunction.
So mine,
no dysfunction is exactly the
mine
same.
Mine is with some of her the stuff that she's had to deal with in her mm-hmm. life.
Yeah.
Which has usually had me in it as well to kind of just be there, and it's
fortunately my wife has not been part of any of the dysfunction of my family. She's seen the after effects.
Yeah.
And dysfunction never goes away.
Yeah.
But we were talking about how you process grief, and I think how you process dysfunction helps to make you the person you are. My mom has been married and divorced 7 times. My father has been married twice.
Yeah.
He is on his second marriage, and even though he wasn't around most of my life, I think I take after my father.
Mm-hmm.
I think my brother is the same way. We both take after our father in regards to relationships.
I think a lot of that, too, is sometimes you can recognize when you see dysfunction, you say, this is not the correct way. I'm going to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a factor in it as well. And some people see the dysfunction and they see that as normal, and that becomes what they do.
We definitely learn our behavior.
Yeah.
We're taught first by our parents, then by our peers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow we also teach ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I should not be in a relationship as strong as the one I have currently.
Yeah.
I have striven to find a relationship that strong. And it's come easy because of the partner I have.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's come from a very good place.
Yeah.
And one of the big jokes in our household is how basically we're two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And opposites attract.
Yeah.
So, of course, we're together. Now you're doing it too, Nibbles?
Yeah.
Stop it. I feel like they're going to eat their feet off. That's going to do nothing. And I think you can agree, because you and I are two ends of the spectrum as far as dysfunction goes. And again, I really wish we had Jim here, because I think he could speak very well on this.
Yeah.
Growing up, I got to see some of the worst parts of humanity. And I think I was lucky in being able to recognize that that's not what I wanted for myself.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't.
No.
A lot of people don't have the wherewithal.
Yeah. And
it's not common sense. It's not intelligence. It's just, it's something inside.
Yeah. And that's how, like, the cycle of abuse perpetuates.
Yes.
Because a lot of people see it from their parents or one of their parents, and that becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a normal family for them. So abuse is a normal thing, and they don't see it as something wrong because that's what they grew up with.
There's so much we could tackle abuse on its own.
Yeah.
And I think we
I think we talked about doing it with Jim, and I think that was one of the ones he wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we might have to get into that more.
Yeah, I think we should we'll go through this, but I think we should table the majority of that part.
Because I kind of think that you're right, that we do learn those things from witnessing it, but I think there's more to it that gets involved, because a woman who could come from a good family could become a victim of abuse and not leave. Because for some reason, I've heard it said that for some reason they think they have earned it somehow.
A lot of times the abuser is really good at convincing the abused that they've done something to deserve it, that they're subhuman. Yeah. They're very good at manipulating people.
Like, it's
scary good.
Yeah, and again, having witnessed abuse in my own life, and even, I think, falling victim to some of it, but again, being rare in the fact that I was able to recognize it and push it away.
Mm-hmm.
I've had relationships where it could have become abusive, but I was able to go, no, that's not the solution, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
And for myself, I think that's why it was so hard for me to date for so long. Obviously, I wanted to be in relationships because I always felt I was very good. And looking back, I can look back and see that, yes, in every relationship I've ever been in, I was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I fell victim to the other person cheating.
Yeah.
Which... three big relationships in my life ended exactly the same way. And it took a long time
and,
to figure out that there was a type.
And did you ever listen to Loveline when it was on?
No.
So I used to listen to that show.
I wasn't a fan of Adam Carolla.
I used to listen to that show a lot. And it had Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Yes.
And he had a lot of good information. He's not one of those fucking Dr. Oz's who doesn't know shit. He actually knew what he was talking about, and he gave good advice.
Mm.
And a lot of times, he was explaining that because of your family life and your upbringing, you're drawn to somebody who is toxic for you.
Yes.
So you are very attracted to somebody, and you basically had a broken picker. So you were picking somebody you were highly attracted to, not necessarily just physically, but emotionally. And a lot of times that would lead you to a bad person.
Yeah.
And one of the ways he explained it was, if you're super attracted to somebody and you've had an abusive upbringing,
mm-hmm.
take a step back. That's probably not the best.
Yeah. It's also interesting that one of the things they say is that you are attracted to someone who reminds you of your mother or father. I used to think that meant in looks, but that's not what it is.
I think it's more characteristics.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what the point I was going to make there. You even if they're not apparent, they're characteristics.
They impact you.
Yes.
They're imprinted onto you.
And you have to, those are the things that you have to step back and go, mm-hmm. is this the right relationship for me? Because sometimes those characteristics, because like I said, sometimes those characteristics aren't apparent, and it isn't until you're in the relationship a month, 2 months, a year before those characteristics start to emerge fully, and you're going, wait a minute, that's not.
Because you don't, you're still in the dating mode, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not in a relationship and comfortable yet.
Exactly.
You have to get to that comfort level before you can truly see who a person is.
Exactly. I think we as humans, because I initially started this conversation to talk about family and how family affects us, but not only that, but how we build family.
Yeah.
Yes? Did you have something to say about family?
Okay. I thought I heard something.
What? There's no one there.
Jeez.
False alarm.
Thank you for protecting us. Yeah. We've talked about life in high school and how everything seems so important, so life-changing, life-altering. Yeah. Like, you know, if you're not wearing the right clothes, your life is over. Those types of things. But I think it's also in high school that we learn more about family.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we don't really call it that, or we don't, you know, associate our friends in that way, we seek solace in the people that we befriend in high school. We look for kindred spirits,
mm-hmm.
people who share our interest, you know, people who are similar to us or just different from us enough that we can forge bonds.
Yeah.
In this day and age, it's a lot easier to keep those bonds going beyond high school. And that leads to the point that family isn't necessarily something we're born into.
Mm-hmm.
We're born into a family unit. But those don't necessarily remain our family for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Again, you are unique in that you come from a family. The thing that most people aspire to have,
mm-hmm.
but for whatever reason, whatever dysfunction, they can't achieve that.
Yeah.
Family is the people we surround ourselves with.
Yeah.
Family is who we choose it to be.
Yeah.
They say you can't pick your family.
But you choose your friends.
I don't think that's necessarily
true.
I think you can pick your family.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. Family is the people who mean the most to mm-hmm. you. Family are the people who support you.
Yeah.
Through thick and thin. Family are the people that you're able to go to say, I have a problem, help.
Yeah.
Necessarily money or anything, but just
help guide me.
Yes.
Help me understand it.
As I said, you are very lucky in the fact that your family is actually your blood family. Mm-hmm. For me, my family is not.
Yeah.
I don't get me wrong. I love my brother, sister, my parents, everything, but they're not the people I go to. I go to my wife. I go to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are more family than my actual family.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. And not necessarily any of them are bad.
Yeah.
A lot of them just has to do with the fact that my family's never been tight.
Yeah.
You know, we've been supportive, but to a point. As I get older, I realize how much I wish we were more supportive, more in contact, those sorts of things. I also understand that, you know, people have lives that grow and spread and they go away. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're any more or less close. It just means life happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel very fortunate in the fact that if I did need my brother or sister for something, they would be there for me, just like I would for them.
Yeah.
But it hurts me to know that my brother and sister's relationship with our mother is decayed to the point that they want nothing to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the full story. I left home at 15.
Yeah.
According to my sister, some bad stuff happened.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is. I'm not willing to dismiss it outright, but there are things that my sister has told me that just don't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think my sister, not unlike my mother, has twisted factual events to fit her loathing.
Yeah.
And her desire to not relate to my mother. My sister and my dad, my brother and my dad are very tight. Me and my dad are not as tight as I would like.
Yeah.
I know the reasons for that.
Yeah.
I've had several, not discussions, but several talks with individuals of the family. And I understand why things are the way they are. And I've tried to express myself to where my father understands my point of view. Mm-hmm. I think we're very... We see eye to eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think my father wishes things were different.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
My biggest regret with my father is that he couldn't be there as much as he wanted to for me.
Yeah.
And I know that has everything to do with my mother. It is what it is. I can't change the past. I can only move forward in the future and learn from mistakes others have made. I don't think, though, that we should necessarily blame all of our problems on parents.
Yeah.
Because at some point you have to take responsibility.
Culpable. Yeah, you're culpable for
and
your
I think
own
it's
actions.
A lot younger than most people are led to believe. I don't think you should take responsibility for yourself at 18 because, let's face it, you're a lot more conscious of yourself even younger.
Yeah.
We've talked about on the show that I was, in my teens, I was very suicidal. Mm-hmm. But I was also... Wow, Brody, you're shaking the whole room there, buddy. I was very aware of the fact of what my ending of my own life would mean to others.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have that wherewithal, especially in teenage years. Yeah. I think I was very lucky in the fact that I was so aware. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way I grew up.
Yeah.
I became aware of a lot more. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean I took responsibility for it. Because I think my brother and sister, who are both very intelligent people, found it easier to blame issues and problems they dealt with on our mother.
Mm-hmm.
And never, like we said, are you going to do it again? Never took responsibility for themselves. Whereas I did.
Yeah.
At 15, I took responsibility for myself because I wasn't going to watch my mother dissolve yet another marriage. A good marriage. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Again, this goes back to what I was saying about dysfunctionality. I watched my mother go from... what I thought was a solid marriage. I was too young to really know the details, and I still don't. I don't think I want to. But to get divorced from my father, to move on to a very abusive relationship where she moved all of us across the country, to go through a couple of really abusive relationships, one of which almost cost me my life.
Jeez.
Yeah. Never watch the A-Team when parents are fighting, especially when one is prone to violence.
He agrees.
Yes. to move us back across the country, to get into a very good relationship, and to break it down because she felt she wasn't getting enough or something. I don't understand...
And it's
how it worked, but
it's easy when you get in that cycle to sabotage a good relationship as well.
Well, and I think she was very good at that. Yeah. And she went from that marriage to another kind of abusive one, but not physically, more mentally, to what I saw as a good marriage. But I think she worked as hard as that guy's ex-wife to sabotage things, to another abusive relationship, which she ended like 2 months after they got married.
Yeah.
So far as I know, there's not a new man in my mom's life. If I do discover that, I think I'm going to tell her that enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there are certain people that can't function on their own. Mm-hmm. They always need someone in their lives. There are also people who need to create drama. They can't have a happy life. They just have to have problems.
Yeah.
I think my mother is both.
Yeah.
And again, I love and respect my mother very much, but I think that she has, like everyone else, she has issues.
Yeah.
And she has not been able to find a way to solve those issues. Mm-hmm. Whereas myself, I don't want drama.
Yeah.
It creates too many problems. I don't have time for it. You're the same way, I think.
Yeah.
No time for drama. There's no need for it.
Yeah. It's not productive.
Find the core issue.
Yeah.
Fix the core issue.
Yep.
I wish we could get more people to recognize that.
Yeah.
And have healthier lives.
Yeah.
But
and healthier relationships.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that we as a species would be better off for it. And I think we as a species could relate to each other better.
Yeah.
I think there'd be less war
mm-hmm.
if we as individuals could deal with our psychoses.
Yeah.
Essentially. Instead of blaming it on some faceless figure in the sky or under the ground, or blaming our parents and not taking responsibility for the things, for the choices we make in our lives.
Yep.
I always love coming here because the dogs keep things entertaining.
Yeah. The other day, Nibbles hopped into that laundry basket.
Oh, is that the one that you had to stop and get her out of?
Yeah.
Last week? That was great.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I took a picture of it. It was pretty funny.
This was a heavy show.
Yeah.
I think our next show, we need to keep things
like that. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's good to delve into some of these topics.
Sometimes you need to get these... I don't even know what it was specifically. I know Jim's Facebook post kind of set it off.
Mm-hmm.
But last night, didn't sleep well, and I had a lot of thoughts swirling around about family and, mm-hmm. and about those things. And I think your recent tragedy kind of helped bolster that, too, because mm-hmm. it seems like... Well, it doesn't seem like 2016's been kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
Just
there's been
all
a
around.
A lot of loss. Just
yeah.
Everywhere.
I don't want to say we're through the loss because there's always going to be loss.
Yeah.
But for the first part of the year, it felt like just the world was ending.
Yeah.
So many inspirational and iconic people were just falling.
Yeah.
And I think that was just, it was, I think that was really affecting everyone. But again, it was, as much as it affected us, it didn't affect us because these weren't people who were personal.
They weren't directly in our lives.
Exactly.
But they still had impact.
Impact and influence, yes.
Yeah, in lots of people's lives.
Yeah. For me, 2016 didn't take a dump until... I want to say late February, early March. That's when it took its first dump. Mm-hmm. And then it took just a big steaming pile in May. I know for you it took a big steaming pile. Just, are you? I thought he was taking a big steaming pile.
He sits very funny sometimes.
He totally agrees with 2016 and he's like, yeah, let me prove it to you. So we've got... less than 2 months until our world could change dramatically. Ugh. Yeah. And it
hurts to even think
about
it.
It is a scary, scary time, my friend.
This whole election has been one big mess.
It has, but at the same time, I think it's finally exposed how corrupt our system currently is.
Yeah.
I hope, and this is a vain hope, I know, but I hope that changes will be made to our system after this cycle.
Yeah.
It's too late to make those changes now. But I hope whomever is our new leader, I hope that she makes big changes. And I hope...
He that shall not be named.
Voldemort? Trumpamort?
They're both pretty ugly, so...
I feel that now that it's been exposed as blatantly as it has been, I hope that changes will be made.
Yeah.
I hope that people will be held accountable.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
But it's my hope.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, okay, next episode, we promise, lighter, funnier. Have no idea what we'll talk about, but we'll...
It'll be a normal episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, see you guys.
See you.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.